our advanced storage architectures. That's from a quote from our vice president. Whether you like his politics or not, I love the way he can say stuff. And he doesn't really apologize either. I love that. So storage is all about abstraction. And that's one of the things that I reinforce with students all the time. It's all about abstraction. At the basis, we've got these SCSI commands that should be going from one operating system over a cable directly to an attached disk. That's what everything's built around. So any course that you build around storage architectures, that's the basis, abstraction. We try and talk about local, cloud, and hybrid architectures. That's one of the things that I think is important. And storage is all about the combination of networking systems and hardware. And so whatever course you develop, you have to kind of deal with those kind of things. Then the other thing I'd say is that the Storage Network Industry Alliance, SNIA, is a really good resource for this kind of a course. Because unlike most other areas, SNIA is agnostic as to manufacturer. So storage has this huge problem. You get EMC only wants to talk to EMC, and there's no way around it. But SNIA comes along and says, wait a second. There's some real generic topics that apply to all storage architectures, and we're going to support that. So I love that. Here's the textbook that I use over there, Storage Networks Explained, and it works pretty well. Program outcomes, blah, blah, blah. But let me get to some of the more interesting things here. So the course outcomes are pretty generic, but I think some of the best outcomes are like that. The description is what it is, and it's out of date also. They always are. The course topics that I talk about, these are just some of the basic ideas that we deal with, and I try and get through almost all of them. NASs and SANs and data protection, disaster recovery, all those kind of things are important topics when you deal with storage architectures. Performance, interoperability, storage virtualization, all that kind of stuff matters. But here's the main point of the course, right here, in these four little drawings. This is what it's all about. Storage is all about encapsulation. Little topic that your students forgot from years ago when they took their networking course, but everything is possible because of encapsulation. And once you take those SCSI commands and the SCSI data, you can put them in anything and get it across any kind of wire you want. So it's all about abstraction, it's all about encapsulation. Network stack comparisons. This illustrates to students why this is a networking technology. And why the system side is only one side of it. And probably the bigger part of it is the network side, although the system side matters also. This drawing over here in the corner, what a host sees, I find this to be a very useful topic to help students to understand why they can do some things and why they can't do others. Because the system only sees the LUNs. Everything else is encapsulated and abstracted away in our intelligent disk subsystems. So everything from here over is about the abstractions associated with the management tools that make all this stuff possible. So that's why that one really matters. And then the SNIA storage model comes along and says, this is a great way to teach this information because it breaks it all down into host block aggregation and network block aggregation levels and all those kind of things. So, there's your final exam question there. You can think of a dozen different essays that students could write about that one little drawing. Why can you do this? Why can't you do this? Why is this what? And so the whole course really boils down to those four drawings. And I try and present the material in that simple a tone. This is what the course is about. The labs that we do, are these. I've come up with standard models for my courses. Grad courses are 6 labs, undergrad courses are 10. All my labs are written in the same format, where we start out with a use case, then we roll into an architecture visio drawing kind of a thing, because I find that really helps students to organize their thinking, and so on and so forth. But you know, we start out with some basic NTFS and EXT file systems. If they don't understand those, nothing else matters. And that really matters. FreeNAS, this nice little NAS box that we can get for free, run it as a VM, do all kinds of interesting things with it. And I'll show you the architectures that the students work with. The Windows Failover Cluster, that's just a nice technology that presents some of the kind of advanced features of NTFS and let the students try those out. Amazon S3 Basics, there's some really nice getting started guides available from Amazon that just walk the students through these basic ideas, and they work so well, and you know, students kind of enjoy them also. And then Storage Gateway, that presents a nice scenario where you've got a local environment that needs to get data out into Amazon's S3 environment, but it needs to do it without overwhelming all the bandwidth available between your local environment and S3. So how do you do that? You stick a VM in your local environment that's just a big buffer. Then you tell it how much bandwidth it can consume between your network and S3. That's a nice little lab exercise, because students build it, they see it, and it makes a lot of sense to them why that's the case. And then Hadoop and Elastic MapReduce, that's an applied situation, but it's a good applied situation. There's good support in a getting started guide that's got some huge log files that the students can work with, and so they're analyzing a web log. Well, that's great. It makes them think about management. It makes them think about what the tools are available to them. They set up a Hadoop cluster. They use the Elastic MapReduce. They see how the multiple paths through the data and all that kind of stuff all works. So, I'm kind of happy with my labs this time around. Like I said, the third time through, I tend to get a little happier with how things are going. Here's the architecture that we use around the FreeNAS environment. And you can see we connect out to the network. Then we've got a nice little Viata router. Viata routers are awesome. They create this private space back there that's just yours. And we can, what do we got? 5 VMs in here? You could cut that down to 4 if you really wanted to. And here you've got a private space that the students can build on their laptops, as long as they get about 8 gigs of RAM or so. And we can do all kinds of stuff in here, including the Windows failover clusters and all that kind of stuff. Just works really well. And that's about it that I've got. So, like I said, I've run through this class a bunch of times. This is the third time through right now. I've done it in shorter versions, longer versions, international audiences, local. And it's a popular course, and it seems to address a real need.
Hi, how do you deal with changing? So, like, I saw you had EXT on there, and EXT is on the way out. And an older architecture, XFS, is on the way in some places, or BitterFS. Or,
right.
Are you having, when you deal... And this is a general question. When you're dealing with technology that changes underneath you course-wise, how are you updating your courseware, even if the book doesn't?
You think about the concepts involved. So why do we teach EXT in comparison to NTFS? Well, it handles the same situation, the abstraction of data blocks to file names, in a totally different way. In NTFS, you've got the database fashion, the database approach, where you've got all the objects and attributes, and you can layer on lots of different attributes, all that kind of stuff. EXT uses a different data structure around that that's very closed in. And so you can look at an EXT, what version? I think I use like 3 in my class. And I point at them and I say, why can't you have file names that are bigger than 255 characters? because that's all the room that you've got in the inode table. Why can't you have files that are bigger than 4 gigs? Because you only have 32 bits to deal with. That's it, no more. And so, you know, you're thinking about what's the concept involved and how can I make that more applicable to the students. And so, you know, I may use an older version, but it's only because I want to reinforce the concepts. And so that's how you do it. You have to think about what's the concept that you want to reinforce and why do you want to do that? And then you have to think about, do I really need to go to the latest version, or is that not going to enhance my ability to get the concept across? That's the trade-off.
Hi, I'm curious, with the different labs that you have and the students building up the architecture, you kind of have them cascading together, do you do any type of lab final exam where you change it in terms of the approach of giving them more of some type of thing where it breaks or some type of, where it's not the overall building of the architecture but more of a response?
I don't, and I can see where you would want to, but I just haven't gotten to that. And, you know, we're always, you know, looking and finding ways to keep our time constraints under control. And I applaud your efforts if you decide to go in that direction.
Does the book map well to your, that you're using? Does it map well to your labs, or do you have independent material that you're using for that?
Yeah, not very well. You're never going to find a textbook that does real well for what you want to do. And particularly, that's the case where, you know, I think it's really important that you bring yourself into the classroom. And so students, I think, do best, and you know, I don't know the research on this, where faculty share of themselves. And so, you know, when you bring yourself into the classroom and students can learn based on how you think and see your thinking in action, that's where the real learning happens. You're modeling those expert ways of grasping the world. And so textbooks I see mostly as backing up things and giving students other ways to learn things. But I really kind of, you know, try and make them think about things based on my interaction with them and then their ability to go out and figure out things on their own, because then you're modeling that metacognition again, because you're thinking, you're saying, this is what we need to build, this is how, the concepts behind it, you need to figure out what you need to learn to be able to do that. So textbooks I see more as a backing up rather than guide for the week by week lectures or however you organize your classes.
Having been thinking about both of these, the virtualization and storage architecture class myself, what are some of the pain points that you found students tend to struggle with more than other things?
In the storage class, it's abstraction. They really have a tough time understanding the abstraction and the idea that everything's based on those old style SCSI commands, and that every bit of storage architecture and storage applications and storage management, all of that stuff is based on those old SCSI commands. And so abstraction along the lines of, you know, how do I understand that these are the same things happening again and again from the perspective of the operating system on the one side and the disks on the other side.
Hi, how much scripting do you ask your students to do?
I ask them to do a bunch of scripting, and it's mostly around those management things. So I'll usually have a couple of scripts involved with every lab, where and it's I always have a testing portion to a lab. So you know they have to figure out ways to see the technology in action, and that's where I have the students do a bunch of scripting. So they'll either be doing scripting that puts a load on something, or they'll be doing scripting that gives back some management information about what's happened in the architecture. That's generally how I structure the scripting kind of things.
Do you use Windows or Linux? I have trouble with a lot of students who want to use Windows. They want to learn Windows, but all the tools available to me are Linux.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of Microsoft's gone to a model where you can get the 60-day licenses for a lot of things. Even like, System Center, which is their big configuration management and tool. You can get a 60-day license for that. Well, you know what? That's probably enough for a class. And so, you know, I rely on those quite a bit. Yeah, you're right. Students love Windows, and they, you know, Linux is painful for them to learn, in particular in our international campuses. Developing countries, once again, it's all Windows. Why? Why would they do that? But, you know, you have to deal with what the students bring to the table. And so I'll do a combination of things. You saw the storage labs, some were Windows-based, because Windows has these nice tools available to us. And there's some good things there. On the other hand, a lot of the workhorses are Linux machines. So I'll try and do a little bit of both. And I try really hard to stay away from those vendor tools and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'll try and have the students see that they can write their own tools to do the things that the vendors say that have to be done. So, you know, I try my best on that.
Though it pains me to say it, PowerShell these days is actually not bad.
Yeah, PowerShell is very powerful and very useful,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
I don't want to go that far. But yeah.